All right, welcome to At the Letters for September 5th, 2024. Ben Nicholson Smith here with you, and I'm joined by Sam McKee. Sam, how's it going?
Hey, man. Really, really honored to be asked to come on this podcast. I don't know if the listeners of this show, if you're an OG listener of At the Letters, you will know that I was the very first producer of this show back in...
That's right.
Oh, God, that'd be a scary long time ago now. Probably 2014. Yeah, like 2015, which is a scary long time ago. I was thinking about that when you asked me to do this, and I was a horrendous producer. Just horrendous producer. Like, I had no training in, like, audio levels or, like, editing. And I remember multiple times, like, I left the music in, and then, like, there would be, like, a random interview on top of another one. I had to go back into the station multiple times to fix it. I was very bad at it. So I'm very appreciative of you guys being sweet, sweet friends and sweet, sweet guys who didn't bury me for it. But yeah, it propelled me onto great things, to being so bad at producing your podcast.
It definitely did. And I want to get to that, because now, of course, Sam is a host on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You see him on Real Kipper and Porn, which is a host that you now produce throughout the hockey season, and are on, of course. You see you on TV all the time. So definitely great heights. And I will say too, to your credit, it's not, and I think Arden would say this too, Arden is traveling this week. He'll be in Atlanta covering off the Jays series there. So that's why he's not on with us to join in this conversation. And I think he would say this too, but it's not exactly as though you were gifted the two most refined, polished, experienced podcast hosts at that time either. So please, no one go back and listen to those first episodes. Oh, do me a favor. Do not listen back. It's a little cringe, you could say.
It's so funny because, you know, Real Kipper and Born, we're heading into our fourth season here starting, you know, pretty soon. And like the first week of the first, you know, season of our show, I have never had worse anxiety about what something was happening. Like, I truly thought that we weren't going to make it to week two. This first episode we did, if you wanted to, you know, like there's all these different types of torture. If you wanted to torture me, you would make me go back and listen to that first week of shows. We did the first show, and then on the second day, Kipper got COVID. So Kipper couldn't come in for the second show.
Oh, no.
And he was doing a show over the phone from his car for some reason. So he was like in his car doing a show, and it was me and Bordy in studio. Boy, if you ever want to torture me, make me go back and listen to those ones. But hey, we've made it to TV now, and COVID's back a little bit now, but it's not as bad as it once was. So we're rocking and rolling. But yeah, a lot of green at the start of this pod back in whatever 2014, Benny.
Yeah, seriously, seriously. But you know what? Here we are still talking Jays, still trying to make sense of them. And, you know, even though, you know, a lot of your on-air time now is devoted to hockey, and you're obviously very, very dialed in on hockey, you are also very dialed in on the Jays. And from a perspective that, like, I think is a little different from mine and Arden's, because we're like covering the team every single day. And you, I mean, I'll leave it to you to describe your perspective on it, because I don't want to try to like label it for you. But like, you're dialed in on the Jays, but in a very specific way.
So here's what I'll say. Like, much like you, I'm still I guess if you would call my Leafs fandom, I've moved into more of the fanalist part of my career with the Leafs, where it's much more my job. And, you know, I still love the Leafs. There's still nothing I would love more in my life outside of friends and family than seeing the Leafs lift Lord Stanley's Cup. That's still number one thing to me. But like, I get a different relationship with the Leafs now because it's my job. I do a show after every single game. We do 5 days a week on Real Kipper and Born. Like, we beat the Leafs to death, and it's a job with the Leafs, which I love, and I'm so lucky to have that job. Millions of people would kill for that job. But with the Jays, you know, I do hosting in the summer on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and I'm dialed in. We talk about the Jays. But I would say it's much more of a still raw fan relationship that I have with the Jays as opposed to the Leafs. And listen, whether I was on Sportsnet 590 The Fan or not, I'm still going to be watching 120, 130 games a year. I truly love baseball. There's nothing like it to me. So yeah, that's sort of my relationship with it. It's just, it's a different one where I don't have to be as dialed in, but I can still, you know, I'm still aware of the narratives. I'm still aware of what people are talking about. I do a segment on it every day. So it's a great relationship that I have with the Jays. Maybe not so much this year, and you can even talk about last year. It hasn't been quite as great, but yeah, it's a fun relationship, and it's a great team to follow throughout the summer.
And I would say, having known you for a long time now, I would say that the takes, like, you have some spicy takes, and you don't hold back from saying them. Because I think, like,
no.
You know, Arden and I sometimes, like, you know this from working with us behind the scenes, and I'm sure, like, the listeners of ATL have heard this over the years too. But, like, it's not like Arden and I don't have hot takes at times. Like, sometimes I'll have a really hot take, but I have to proceed with a certain amount of caution.
Well, you know, yeah, just you have to have some candor.
Fairness. No, yeah, exactly.
I have no candor.
I can't just destroy every, you know, if a reliever gives up 3 home runs, I can't sit here and just call them, you know, dog bleep the next day. Like, I have to have a little bit of decorum when I'm handling myself with this stuff.
So, yeah, I love a spicy take on baseball, but it's the hardest sport to have spicy takes on because it's literally every day and you can look dumb immediately, right? Like, in 24 hours, you can immediately look very smart or very dumb. Like, for example, I was on the morning show earlier this week with our boy Ben Ennis, does a wonderful job with Brent Gunning on the Fan morning show. And he was talking about, he's like, how big of a miss was not getting Kyle Schwarber for the Jays? What summer? What winter was that, Ben? 2022? Was that before 2022 or 2023? I can't remember.
Before 22, because this is Schwarber's third year with the Phillies.
Yeah. So he was saying that, like, we were ranking the ones that sort of got away for the Blue Jays, and we were talking about Jose Ramirez, and we were talking clearly about Shohei Ohtani. We were talking about all this stuff, but he's like, boy, Kyle Schwarber would have been perfect at the top of that Jays lineup. He would have been the guy that, you know, the left-handed power that they needed throughout the 21-22 season that they were lacking. And yeah, and then Kyle Schwarber goes out there and hits 3 home runs, and he looks like the smartest man alive, including the go-ahead one in the top of the ninth after, what was it, a 13-12 pitch at bat where, you know, Chad Green gets put through the ringer.
And a high fly ball to deep right field. They've come all the way back. A 3-run missile. Kyle Schwarber's third home run of the night, and the Phillies finally get that.
So you have the ability to look really smart and the ability to look really dumb when doing hot takes on baseball, but that doesn't stop me. You know, that's what I do. I'm a fan. I care. I'm passionate. And yeah, I got a lot of takes on the Jays. You want me to start here? I got a spicy one for
you. Yeah, let's dive in. Let's get into it. What do you got? Where do you want to start?
So I was thinking a lot about, because I, like everybody else in Blue Jays fandom, in baseball fandom, have been totally fascinated by the season that Shohei Ohtani has been having, right? And it's otherworldly. And I credit Sportsnet for putting so many of their games on where after the Blue Jays game's done, and I know you're at the games a lot, so you're not getting the same experience as I, but I'll watch a bit of the Dodgers games. And by a bit, I mean the first 2 innings before I fall asleep at 10:30 p.m. like I do every night.
Yeah.
But, you know, I watch a Shohei at bat or two, and I'm just totally, totally, totally blown away by this guy. And when you do the sports talk radio thing of ranking all the best athletes from generations or whatever, from this generation, he's going to be number one, number two, number three. Like, he, you know, he's on the Mount Rushmore. He's the top five, whatever you want to say, he's going to be in that conversation. And listen, this year has completely sucked from a Blue Jays fan perspective. And, you know, the start of the year was totally wretched. And after they traded everybody, it's been better. But I have to say, I think even though the Blue Jays didn't get Shohei Ohtani, I think the pursuit of him and being that close was potentially worth having such a bad season. Like, if you were in that conversation, if you were that close, and who knows how close they actually were, we'd all know the plane, we all know everything that happened. But, like, this was a guy that you had to use all your resources, all your time, everything. Well, they didn't have a plan B. Well, like, their plan A was literally the greatest baseball player of all time, and they were in the finals. So they had an awful offseason. But I can't fault them for putting every single egg they had in this basket. The guy is unbelievable, Ben. It's hard to fault them. He's so good.
Yeah.
1-1, high fly ball, deep right field. Shohei in Toronto, into the bullpen. Boo that. A 1-0.
To me, it's astounding that in a year where he's not pitching, he's like, okay, cool, I'll just steal 50 bags. I'll be the first
MLB
player ever. Yeah, I'll go 50-50. You know, like Acuna, yeah, last year you go 40-40, cool, you steal a bunch of bases. Like, I'm literally going to go 50-50 for the first time in the history of the sport. And then, like, come back next year and probably be a number two starter for the Dodgers. Like, it's absolutely unbelievable what he's doing. And I do think he was the perfect plan A. Like, he was the plan A plus. Like, you couldn't possibly have a better plan. And I do credit them for going after Ohtani. And I do think it was the right idea. And, you know, not to relitigate the whole thing, but I don't think he was using the Jays, because I don't think he flies to Dunedin, Florida, you know, and does a tour of their complex just to get a little bit of leverage. So I think that all makes sense. But, you know, it's, yeah, the plan B wasn't nearly good enough. And then that's where we are right now, because, you know, you end up with, you know, Kiermaier and Turner and IKF and Chad Green.
Vogelback.
That's where you spend. Yeah, that's where you spend your money and your resources. And it's just like the team was not good enough. So, you know, I'm not inclined to give the Blue Jays a pass on what happened next. But I am 100% with you that going after Ohtani was the right thing to do from ownership on down, because it took a ton of coordination to even get that push to the point that it was. And so that part of it, that first step or the first few steps to getting there, I do think was the right call.
Yeah. And, like, you know, it's a hard one to say that, because it's been such an awful season, and IKF was having, I mean, for them to get anything for IKF when they traded him, they sold up the perfect time, because I think he's been pretty putrid since he went over to the Pirates. And, you know, they got a warm body for Justin Turner, where there's immediately, they've stunk the second the Mariners got him, basically. So they did a good job of trading off these plan B guys. But if you're in that conversation and it's going to cost you a season is fair. I get why they did it, because they were close to having maybe the greatest baseball player of all time. I truly get it. Maybe not like saying it's worth it to have this season, because the business aspect of that. And then you heard Shapiro talk about the hit and season's tickets they've gotten, and it's clearly not worth it to them. But the more I watch Shohei Ohtani play this season, and the more I've seen from him, it's just like, God, of course they had to go all the way down that road. Like, they just had to.
They had to. And it was, like, I don't want to say close, but I believe strongly that they were the second, that they were the runner-up team to get Ohtani. And that's something. I mean, end of the day, you get him or you don't. I mean, that's kind of the nature of these things. And they didn't get him, and they didn't respond well enough. But, okay, so let me ask you this then. So we all know Juan Soto's about to be a free agent. And I suspect that when I say that, there is a certain segment of Blue Jays fans listening to us right now that are, like, shuddering and are, like, hitting the skip button on their podcast, because it's like PTSD.
Me. I'm about to hit, like, skip.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you can't, you're on with me. So,
okay.
But, you know, so what do you do? Like, because some of those same arguments, and it's a different player, and it's a different set of circumstances, but Juan Soto is, like, historic. Like, he is not your ordinary, he's not your Cody Bellinger, he's not your George Springer. There's a different level to what Juan Soto is doing here, especially, you know, you just look at what he's doing offensively and the consistency and the excellence that he brings as an offensive player. Do you think the Jays should be pushing $550-600 million in on Juan Soto?
Yes, of course. Yeah. If he's willing to come here and he's willing and they're willing to pay him, yes, pay him the Shohei Ohtani money. But I think from a business perspective, Ben, as you know, the connection with Shohei was to get all of Japan, to get all of the Far East in with the Jays, right? Like, that was a huge part of it, where you want to have the Shohei, you want to have the performance on the field, but you want to have those roots in Japan, you know, over there, because, you know, that's a huge, 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 massive market where you can get everybody wearing Blue Jays jerseys. And now, like, the Dodgers, $700 million, which, they deferred it. Like, they don't even think about that money. They're going to make that money back in 2 weeks from Shohei Ohtani.
They could go sign Soto.
They could go sign Soto.
They're flush. They're fine.
So I think the Juan Soto pursuit, because, you know, his name was in the headlines with the Jays too last offseason, where they were potentially going to be trading for him. Boy, what an offseason on paper that was. Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, that was getting everybody horned up. That was a pretty exciting start to the offseason. But yeah, I think that's one that you do, but I guess it's just the small market, and it's not the small, we're not a small market here, but just the Canadian market baseball mentality. Like, is he really going to choose the Jays over the Yankees, over potentially the Mets, over potentially the Dodgers? Like, are the Blue Jays going to be in that echelon of team when it comes to signing a guy at free agency? I just find that hard to believe. You know, this era of Blue Jays baseball, in terms of the front office, they've been willing to spend, and they've gotten some big time names, right, on the free agent market. I'm not going to take that away from them. It just feels like obviously Shohei, because it didn't end up happening, and Juan Soto are a completely different animal than Chris Bassett and George Springer and Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, it really is, because of a lot of reasons. Like, among them, you're talking about historic precedent setting deals, and you know that Scott Boras, who reps Soto, is going to be seeking a deal that sets new records for AAV, which, you know, he will certainly do. $45 million is, I think, a floor probably for the AAV on Soto. I think the total value of this deal, depending on deferrals, will be somewhere between, you know, $500 million as a floor, but I could see it being $650. And Boras doesn't like deferrals, so Boras probably wants it in, you know, in present-day dollars. So, yeah, $500 to $650. And if you're the Jays, because, like, you know the Yankees are probably going to be in, right? Maybe the Mets are in, too. Maybe the Dodgers. The Giants tend to lurk on these teams. Mm-hmm. So that's four really serious bidders. It's one thing to be in, and I fully expect that the Blue Jays, like, obviously, they're going to have conversations with Scott Boras about Juan Soto. That is a fact. They have interests. Like, that will happen. But then it's like, to what extent does that interest actually, you know, continue? And where does it lead? And if you want to win that bidding war, it's going to, A, require a lot of coordination from ownership again for a player whose global appeal is not the same as Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
And then, B, you're going to have to be willing to go above and beyond the Yankees and the Mets. And so this is where it's sort of like, you know, so say the Yankees
get the blank check out.
You're the New York. Right. Yes. You have to get the blank check out at a certain point. If the Yankees are like 600, no deferrals, one, we want you in New York, you're going to be a, you know, a Yankee legend with Judge. That's a tough thing. And I just, I don't know. I wonder. And so then I'm not saying don't do it, because I think they should express interest and they should get a real sense of what it would take. But the thing is, this year, you have to have a much better backup plan than what they did this past offseason.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. I think that's really well said. And yeah, the Soto thing is a really, really, you know, it's way out there in terms of pie in the sky and possibility of him actually signing here. But just to go back to that Shapiro press conference that I think you were present at, and we aired it live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and then we came out of it, and boy, I was the wrong guy to do after that. I just was not the most concise, and I didn't really hold back after that one. That was one where I turned the mic off, was like, boy, I probably should have thought about a couple things I said there. But anyways, I digressed. During that press conference, he said that he didn't say playoff contender. He didn't say wild card contender, Ben. He said World Series contender. And how do you contend for a World Series? You sign guys like Juan Soto. Juan Soto is a World Series contender type of player. You pair him in a lineup next season with potentially Bo Bichette if he gets back healthy and they don't trade him this offseason, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. that we've seen over the past 4 months. That is a real start to a real lineup where you can start to sprinkle in these young guys where they can contribute a little bit. And like, yeah, that starts to look better. Oh, I guess you need seven bullpen arms too. That might be a tougher one to do. But I think if you really are going to hold Mark Shapiro true to his word and saying that they're going to be World Series contenders, they have to be in this conversation for Juan Soto big time. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on it.
They do. And then they have to have, you know, all kinds of different pathways that are where honestly the Jays, if they want to win next year with not a ton of upper level pitching to reinforce this current roster, like that's the thing. That's part of the reason their bullpen isn't good right now. They have not developed enough upper level pitching, and you know, they are pretty bereft of, you know, and pitching is like almost half the game. So, you know, that is a significant void. Or, you know, I don't want to say void, but it's a significant shortcoming at the upper levels of the organization. So you have to thread that needle pretty finely, and you have to hit on some free agent signings if you're going to be that World Series contender. Because, you know, and this is the one thing, like, now in this current playoff format, to me, the best way to be a World Series contender is win the division, because then you avoid the wild card heartbreak that has haunted the Blue Jays in 2022 and 2023. It doesn't matter when you pull Jose Berríos in game two of the wildcard series, if that's actually game two of the division series, because you have another game to work with and it's not an elimination game. You're already one round closer to the World Series. And I think that's where, like, the Jays, they've built some good teams, and I think that that can get overlooked. And I think that people can kind of forget that, like, 21 was a good team, 22, even last year, like, to their credit, they've built good teams, but they have yet to build a great team. And I think that, you know, that's an ambition worth having, because it gets you sometimes that first round bye and that chance to avoid the randomness that is that first round.
But the problem with that, Ben, is the Baltimore Orioles and the New York Yankees exist. So that's going to be tough. And the Rays, who are having a down year.
And the Red Sox. And both the Rays and Red Sox have really, really good farm systems.
Yeah, for sure. So it's going to be a big time uphill battle. But yeah, I think if you look at the standings now, I mean, it's so heartbreaking for Blue Jays fans, myself included, that they are this bad this year. Because you do not have to be very good to be in contention for the wild card. Like, you look at the teams that are there, like, the Royals will not win. The Royals have stopped winning completely. What have they lost? 7 or 8 in a row? Or maybe they won last night. I'm not sure. I didn't see. But they were on a really big-time cold streak. The Mariners have turned into the White Sox all of a sudden. They can't win anything. The Red Sox are, 4.5 games? Like, you could be playing meaningful September baseball if you were just had a half-decent bullpen. And, if you were last year's team, basically. Last year's team right now would be in contention for a wild card spot, no question in my mind. And they just got off to such a bad start with so many. Just think about all the guys that they gave at bats to at the start of the year, that they were blocking these younger guys that have come up and given them this sort of life. It's a tough pill to swallow looking at the standings, knowing that you didn't even have to be elite by any stretch of the imagination. You just have to be half decent this season, and you are in that race. And I'm sure that's what's keeping Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins up at night looking at the standings. Like, boy, we didn't have to be good. We just had to be half decent, and we were right there.
Right, right. Even if they had just kind of held their own and, you know, you fall 4 or 5 games below 500 at your worst point instead of 9 or 10 games below. Like, that's the thing in this playoff format. If you're out of it, like, you actually have to play really badly. And unfortunately, the Blue Jays have had stretches this year where they played really badly, and you can blame it, you know, on the bullpen or on, you know, George Springer, going into a decline phase. Bo Bichette has missed so much time. All these things combine, and you end up with a team that's not great. And then, you know, for next year, like, on the list of big picture questions is, does it make sense to continue pushing? And I tend to think I'm leaning toward, like, yeah, it makes sense to try to win in 2025 for the exact reason that you're outlining, where it's like, you don't have to be that amazing. But there is risk to that approach as well, because let's say you're trying to build a bullpen for next year. You want to acquire like 4 relievers, right? So you're trading maybe one of your young position players. You're signing one in free agency. Maybe you have to get uncomfortable. Like, maybe you have to spend, you know, $56 million on Tanner Scott, you know, to throw a number out there. And over 4 years to get a real reliever, or Carlos Estevez. It's like, you know, 48/4 for Estevez. So you're uncomfortable there. You're trading away, like, let's say it's a Will Wagner to get a reliever. Then you're maybe trying to hit on a couple minor league deals. You're trading away a couple prospects to get another reliever. Then at the deadline, you have to trade more to get more bullpen help. Like, this is, you're giving up a lot to even try to contend next year. And I think it's probably worth it, because every season, who knows? You can hit on a few things and you can have a really good year, and that's worth trying for. But I don't think it's even like a foregone conclusion in my mind. Like, it's more like, I don't know, 75-25 that, yeah, they should try to win next year.
Yeah, and it's an awesome point about about getting bullpen help. It's so scary spending money on bullpens, and so scary trading position players who are young for bullpen help. I mean, listen, everybody kills Ross and Mark for the Varsho trade. That ain't the worst one, bud. It was the Teoscar for Eric Swanson trade, where Eric Swanson was okay last year. Like, he wasn't awful, clearly. He was a good reliever for them. He pitched in big innings for them. He was fine. And then this year, the start of the year, obviously he had a horrible, horrible thing happen to him in spring training. Never gets off to the right start. I'll give you all that. But, like, Teoscar Hernandez is one of the elite hitters in the major leagues of baseball, like, power hitters. He's amazing. And he won the home run derby, didn't he? Or was he in the final? He did win the home run derby. Like, he's a superstar kind of guy. And that's, I mean, listen, I don't think Will Wagner's Teoscar Hernandez. I don't. But you trade Will Wagner for some other team's seventh inning guy, and then Will Wagner turns into, like, Daniel Murphy. You're like, oh, crap.
Right.
Probably shouldn't have done that. Probably should have held on to the young guy with all the control that's got all this promise. So you're right. It's a dangerous one. But you know this better than I do, Ben. when you spend 300 schmil on the Rogers Center and in your first 2 years of it, you're not in contention. The upper-uppers who are, you know, who pay our paychecks and pay the paychecks of everybody else are not going to be thrilled about that. So as smart as it probably it would be to not like go all in this offseason trading some of your prospects for bullpen help or even for starting pitching help or for whatever, I don't think they have much of a choice business-wise. I really don't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's probably a fair point. And I'm probably thinking of it maybe too much through the baseball lens, because I've heard from like really, really smart baseball people who are like, man, you know, you could just reset for 26 and then you're like really strong. And that's like a, man, it's a tempting line of thought. At the same time, like, I absolutely hate the anti-competitive, like, let's push it down the line and let's not try to win. So if there's a way to thread the needle, if there's a way to win and to contend and to do right by your players and your fans, obviously fans first and foremost, but also your players, like, I tend to tilt that way. So that's where I'm kind of like, all right, we have to, you know, is anyone talking about this team and thinking about this team, let's think along those lines and think alongside a front office that, to your point, is probably going to be intent on winning based on all the conversations that I've had. You know, certainly seems like they expect to, you know, to contend in 2020.
Yeah. So I mentioned Vladdy there, and Vladdy's what I mentioned when we were talking about Juan Soto. This is one thought that I have hated having, but I'm sure people have brought this up to you. Like, you know, I've loved this season from Vladdy, and it's been one of the best reasons to tune in every single night. And it's clearly really, really good timing for him in terms of contract negotiations and this offseason and whatever. It's a great time to have the best season of your career. I do think this is a better year than he had in 2021. Don't you? Like, it just looks better to me.
I think it's better. And I think I think the leverage now, Arden and I have talked about this a bit, but I think the leverage now has flipped so hard to Vladdy. Like, he is in such a good spot right now. And he's, and just to his credit, he's had an amazing year.
Yeah. So, like, I'm just looking back on his numbers. 2021, he was pretty unbelievable. Like, you know, it's a different type of year, clearly, because he's the focal point of the offense. And that 2021 offense was out of this world. Probably one of my favorite Blue Jays teams to ever watch. And it's such a shame they didn't make the playoffs. So,
they were so good.
He's in the middle of a much more potent offense that year. So maybe this year is a little bit better. But anyways, I digress. It doesn't necessarily matter to my point. Is there like any worry about him having this in a totally meaningless year before you're trying to contend and paying him $350 million? Like, last year, he was a 788 OPS when they needed him to be good. I hate that that thought has crossed my mind, because I've loved the season from Vladdy, and it's done a lot for me in terms of my relationship with him. But that thought has crossed my mind a few times. Have you had that conversation with anybody? Or am I the only Dumbo that brought that up?
Well, so honestly, it's not something I've spent time thinking about. Like, if I'm the Blue Jays, this season to me is more like proof that he can succeed after making adjustments, that he can, you know, struggle and then make an adjustment, that he can also succeed when every manager, when they're making a pitching change, it's with Vlad Jr. in mind. Every starting pitcher, when they're game planning, they are thinking through the Vlad Jr. at bat much more so than they're thinking through the Brian Servant at bat. When a reliever comes in, he's like, you know what I mean? The reliever's sweating bullets out there, worried about Luis De Los Santos, Sam. You know, he's worried about Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Throw the one. Put down the one and throw it hard.
Yeah, exactly. Even George Springer, right? Even Bo Bichette this year, when he's been on the field, like, you know, you're facing Ernie Clement. Here's the scouting report on Ernie Clement. Throw it outside the strike zone and let him swing at it and see what happens. But with Vladdy, it's really tough because he's that good of a hitter. And so he is succeeding in the face of tons of game planning, tons of attention, all kinds of, you know, data out there on Vlad Jr. He's still one of the best hitters in baseball. So to me, as he enters his age 26, 27, 28 seasons, like, this guy is as close to a lock it in, you know, elite hitter as you're going to get. Like, he's up there with the Witt, Soto, Judge, Otani, Yordan. Yep. Like, he's
truly elite.
If he's not, he's truly elite. Like, this is the guy that we thought that he was going to become, and he's here.
Left field, deep, and it is.
is gone. That'll boost the batting average, the home runs, the RBIs, and a lot of other things along with it, including the lead.
So I want to make it clear. I would just give him the blank check treatment. I want to keep him around. I think it's just he needs to be a Blue Jay for not for life, because you know how those things go at the end of these contracts. But for the prime years of his career, he should be a Toronto Blue Jay. But I just, you know, it's just the no pressure thing. And I'm get so sucked into like the clutch stuff. And, you know, you look at his playoff stuff and how bad it's been in the six games that he's played in, like, these little birdies cross my mind, but that's probably just a pessimistic Toronto sports fan in me. But I think what he represents to the Blue Jays in terms of their sort of contention window, quote unquote, which it hasn't been a lot of contending, clearly, like they've been in the playoffs a couple of times, but outside of that, it hasn't been, you know, awesome. They haven't won a playoff game. So I use contention with big time air quotes. But if you're trading Vladdy, you're not giving Vladdy the money. Like, if you're looking into this offseason, I don't think they're going to do it because of what we talked about earlier. But, like, I think he's worth more to the Jays even than he's worth to anyone else because of what he represents. Yeah. Like, if you're not signing Vladdy, that is a white flag on your franchise. Like, what is this franchise going forward without Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? You are in the absolute wilderness. Like, if he's not here, then Shapiro's probably not here. Atkins probably not here. And then you're just kind of starting over. And it feels like there's no need to completely start over when you have one of the elite hitters who's in his prime, entering his prime. Like, he's still so young. He just represents a ton to the Jays, and they have to get this contract done. They do. There's no other way around it.
I think, you know, with Vladdy, I agree that it makes sense to extend him. And I think that he's not like a perfect player, right? Like, he's not, not like, you know, no one is, but even compared to like a, I don't know, like a Bobby Witt Jr. who's like an elite fielder, an elite base runner, all these different things, like, Vlad Jr. will probably have moments where defensively he tries to make a highlight reel play and it doesn't work and it backfires, or base running wise he tries to do a little too much and he, you know, it's not for lack of effort, it's not for lack of wanting to do the right thing, but he might, you know, try to stretch a single into a double when he shouldn't, or he might not hustle out of the box every single time. But end of the day, you know, it's kind of nitpicking, because he is such a good player. And I think that, you know, you look at the territory that he's going to have to sign in, to me, it has to be above $300 million. And honestly, Arden and I have talked about this as well. If it's under $400 million, like, you're getting 10 years of Vladdy, he's becoming your Hall of Fame centerpiece player. Obviously, you need more. Obviously, no one player is good enough in baseball. It's not that kind of sport. We all understand that. But you need to start somewhere. And to me, if you get this, if they get this done in the offseason, and it's like, hey, 365 over 10, like 365 over 11, whatever it is, like, that is a good deal if the Blue Jays can get that done. But I don't know. I don't know what those conversations are going to look like.
I find that hard to believe under $400 million. I do. And, you know, you just think about, like I said, what he represents to this team. But think about, like, I've mentioned the business side of this a few times. Like, who am I, Bob McCowan here? I'm in the business of sports. But think about what he represents in terms of marketability, too, right? Like, he is a incredibly affable superstar. Great smile. Like, you know, all-star starting, you know, type of guy. Been in the home run derby. Type of guy you can put up on every sort of flag outside Rogers Center, a guy that's in commercials wearing Blue Jay stuff. Like, he is so valuable off the field as well. So that part of it, to me, it's like, is it really going to be under $400 million? I don't know. Like, he seems like he's in that echelon. It really does. Yeah. So it's going to be a very interesting one.
I think they might be able to get it done for under 400. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't rule that out, but, you know, if Soto signs for 650, and then, you know, that's in December, and then it's February, and Vladdy's now 6 months away from free agency, and it takes, you know, like, at a certain point, it's like, do you want the guy or not, right? Like, if it's over four, I'm not sitting here saying that's such a bad idea.
Listen, all these contracts are horrible the second the ink dries, so just, you know, put on the blindfold, sign it, and just enjoy the next 4 years of Vladdy's absolute prime, and you're not going to be thinking about the money, so... That's what it comes down to for me. Like, are the last 4 years of this contract going to be awesome? Probably not.
No.
But guess what? That's not what you're worrying about.
Yeah. All right. We're going to step aside for a minute here on At the Letters. We'll come back. We'll talk about Bo Bichette, the path forward for the Jays, and more with Sam McKee on ATL. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Welcome back to At the Letters, which is produced, you know, I skipped this over in the first segment because we were talking about producers past, but this episode, this season of At the Letters is produced by Christian Ryan. So thanks as always to Christian and also to Nick.
Much better at his job than me, but much better than
Christian.
And who was the other guy? Sorry.
Nick Andrade also involved with this, but yeah, Christian does a phenomenal job and we should shout him out more often. Yes, definitely a team effort here on ATL. But, you know, we were just talking about Vlad Guerrero Jr., Sam. And, you know, with that, whoever's making that decision, this is, I would think, this is a scale of decision that goes all the way up to ownership, right? Like, you can pick up Chad Green's option and not involve ownership. You know, you can trade Isaiah Kiner-Falefa without running it past the board, I would think. You know, we're talking here about a huge deal. Whatever Vlad Jr. signs for, if he signs, will be by far the biggest contract in the history of the Toronto Blue Jays, which is nearly a 50-year-old franchise. So that's something. So the people in charge right now, Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, you know, this would be their biggest investment yet with the team. And it's interesting, too, because historically, you look at Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, they are process oriented. They are deliberate. They are not like splashing out left and right. They are not doing things ad hoc. They are very thoughtful and deliberate in the way that they do things, whether that works or not in a given year, whether fans like it or not. We can have all kinds of discussions there, but this would be a really big decision for this front office. And yeah, I think the timing of it is really interesting too, because depending on when you do it in the off season, if you do it, like to me, the earlier you do it, the better. Because that would be something that, okay, if you sign Vlad Guerrero Jr., it's easier to recruit free agents. But for Vladdy, he might want to see what Juan Soto gets. And if Juan Soto gets 625, then all of a sudden the numbers go up.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think this is, to me, one of the more fascinating questions. And I'll ask you this. This is something I've been thinking about a lot with the front office and the relationship with Vladdy. You know, they've had a long time together, these two, right? Where if Mark Shapiro is presenting this to the board, he probably has some biases on Vlad. Ross Atkins probably has some biases on Vlad. We know how the arbitration went this past year where Vladdy ends up winning, right? Is that this year or last year? Can't remember.
That was this year.
That was this offseason, right? Where he won in his... It does. But he wins his arbitration case. Like, what has a better chance of getting Vladdy signed? The fresh set of eyes GM that comes in is like, guys, what the hell are we talking about here? Just pay him. Like, what are we doing? Why are we talking about this? Why are we, you know, why are we arguing over $25 million when it comes to Vladdy here? Let's just get this done. Or is it the general manager and ownership that, or sorry, president and Mark Shapiro that have a close relationship with his representation? They've gone down the road, obviously. They've been through a lot together. I just don't know which side of it's better. I'm kind of confused on this one. Like, it feels like a really hard offseason to bring in a brand new fresh set of eyes, much like what it was when the Leafs brought in Brad Treliving, right when the only chance they had to trade Mitch Marner, Brad Treliving was still getting his key cards figured out. It's a very interesting sort of offseason time to bring in a new person,
right? And this is where, like, I'm not going to sit here, and this applies to Bo Bichette, who we'll get to in a bit too. And it applies to a lot of things, really. Like, I don't want to sit here and say, like, definitively that one thing is going to happen or another with respect to Ross Atkins or even with respect to Mark Shapiro. At this point, I think that the likeliest path forward for the Blue Jays is Mark Shapiro continues as president, Ross Atkins continues as GM. And that is honestly, like, that's my expectation. But I'm not sitting here reporting that, like, that is definitively 100% going to be the case. And listening to Mark Shapiro talk about this last month, he left himself flexibility to go both ways because he spoke about the value of stability, but he did not say, and Ross Atkins is our GM going forward. That part was unsaid. And, you know, we know that those two go back a long way. We know that they work well together and have a lot of alignment when it comes to how to do these things. But that part was still unsaid. So, you know, I could see, and I see a lot of speculation. I see a lot of, you know, assumptions really being made about what's going to happen or what won't happen. And we saw this earlier in the year where it seemed like everyone was assuming that Ross Atkins was going to be fired. And then we're seeing it now where that speculation has been dialed back. I honestly don't know. And if I did know, I would report something. And I don't see anyone else reporting anything definitive, which tells me that no one knows in a definitive way. So the one thing I can say is that I believe it's likely that Ross Atkins will continue as the GM. I don't know that for certain. And I know that the Blue Jays are process oriented with everything. So that would include their assessment of their own front office, their assessment of their own work. So I'm led to assume that that process is ongoing behind the scenes. And when Mark Shapiro speaks at the end of the season, we'll get some more clarity on what exactly that looks like. And we'll see what happens.
You know how their favorite saying is continuity is a competitive advantage, which is a saying right. that just, you know, drives a lot of people up the wall. I will believe that if they get Vladdy signed, because then it'll be like, well, the continuity of knowing him and having the relationship and all this stuff, because it hasn't been a competitive advantage for a very long time here. They've played in 6 playoff games over how long they've been here now? 8 years.
This is the 9th season.
And they've won none of them. So I you know, continuity is a competitive advantage when you're Bill Belichick, Ben, when you're John Cooper with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah, it's competitive because you're good at it and you win and you've got all these things to point to. I don't feel like it's the same way here. I understand the perspective and the process oriented stuff. I think I agree with you. Everything you said there in terms of him staying and the Ross Atkins still being the general manager of this team. I just don't know how that's going to go over, buddy. That's what I really like. This fan base, the fans matter, man. Like, I know people, you say the decision, well, if you start acting like a fan, you're going to end up being one. That's a classic old saying that people love to say, but the perspective matters, and they can show it by their pocketbook in terms of season tickets, and they can show it in ways where they stop going to games. And listen, I understand that everything costs a lot more, but it's not as cheap as it once was to go to a Blue Jays game. So, like, your fans' perspective on your front office and the trust of what you have there, you need to have that. And I don't think there's a lot of trust with the front office. And it's complicated, right? Because they seemingly had a very good trade deadline where they've really restocked the cupboards a little bit, where they've got some young blood into the organization for their aging stars. And we've seen some stuff from Will Wagner early that makes you excited. Joey Loperfido had a really brutal start. He went back up and he's kind of down on the roller coaster again here, but you see some promise there with him. But yeah, I think it's complicated that, you know, Shapiro saying that, you know, the competitive advantage thing rubs people the wrong way. And I don't know how it's going to go over if after the season ends and Mark Shapiro does his end of year thing and he says that Ross is coming back. And they have a so-so offseason again, which they can't really do. I don't think the perception is going to be great with the Jays, and I think it's going to hurt their attendance next year, straight up.
Right. Well, it already has. They're down this year compared to last year, and I would expect that that would continue because, like you say, the trust is not there. It's unfortunately not there. Now, you know, could that be rebuilt with a Vlad Jr. extension? I think to some extent it could. It will take more than that. Of course
that would help.
I think it would help. And to your question, going back to the kind of fresh set of eyes thing, tell me if I sound like totally out over my skis on this, like if this is like total hubris on my part, but like, I actually don't think that extending Vladdy is that complicated. Like I'll say this, like if you're trying to develop you're trying to take a 12th round pick and develop him into a number 3 starter in the major leagues, that takes an incredible amount of coordination and expertise and time and effort and adjustments. To extend Vlad Jr., like, it's mostly about money, right? I mean, I haven't talked to him about this topic. He's having a lot of fun. He's clearly enjoying this Blue Jays team and this Blue Jays season, and he seems to be in a really good headspace. But, you know, if you make him a really competitive offer that is in line with the market and shows him respect, I think you've got a good chance of getting something across the finish line.
Yeah. I mean, here is a lot of money for a long time to remain a Blue Jay. and you want a couple opt-outs in the last couple years, or you want an opt-out here, want an opt-out there, like they do with all these contracts, sure. But like, it doesn't seem like it's that complicated. Completely agree. I will give the Blue Jays ownership and Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins credit. The one thing that really this year, the ballpark rocks. Going to the ballpark, like they have done an incredible job on that. And I've said this on all the shows that I've been doing, where the team hasn't been great this year, clearly. But man, the Rogers Center is night and day from what it used to be. And they really do deserve credit. And sure, it costs a lot more, but guess what? It costs you $125 to get out of any grocery store these days. So everything costs a lot more, Ben. So it's just kind of the way things go. But yeah, like I have to give them full credit for the job they've done with the Rogers Center, because it absolutely rocks. I love going down there. As a tall man, you're a tall man yourself. The extra leg room in the lower bowl is phenomenal. All the different spots to hang out. Like that is one spot where, boy, do they deserve a lot of credit, because it's an awesome, awesome experience going down to the ballpark when they win. And it hasn't been a ton of winning this year, but when they going down there, it's a lot of fun, I will say.
Well, and this is where, like, and I've heard the same from so many people. I'm sure you have as well. Like, I think that it's been universally just, you know, really, really welcomed, all these changes. And of course, you've got a team that, I'll say this as far as someone who covers this team, like, the individual players in this team are quite likable. It's not a difficult group. I've covered, you know, lots of different Jays teams over the years. And you go back to like 2015, 2016, you know, that was kind of a difficult group in some ways. And, you know,
that's putting it nicely over many, but prickly.
Yeah. Watch that comment get aggregated. It's like, I don't think that's too spicy of a take. This group, and like, it doesn't, end of the day, like, it's about wins and losses, right? Like, you know, but if these guys were winning, it's quite a likable group. And you know, they're quite personable individuals. I think that in an alternate universe, they'd be very popular and easy to root for. It's just they, you know, didn't develop enough pitching. They didn't make the right free agent signings. We can go down the list. We don't need to go over it all now. But, you know, there are a lot of, and this is partly too what makes this season so frustrating, I think, for anyone kind of involved with it. And of course, this frustration extends to the players and to the coaches and to the front office. But, you know, this could be different, and it's not. It really is a lost season. And that's a shame, because it's a market that deserves a lot better.
Yeah, no question. And I find myself being like, God, I love watching these guys. And like, yeah, what are they, 8 games under .500? It's like, how many of these guys will actually be contributing if they're trying to be good? 2? You know, tops 3, right? Like,
well, I mean, I think it's more, but it's like, I think you probably have Kirk, Varsho. I mean, when they're good, you know, like, let's say everything goes well next year, or maybe it's 26. Like, but let's say it's next year. Kirk, Varsho, Vladdy, those guys are big contributors. Bo as well.
Springer.
Springer is something of a contributor.
Well, I mean, with that contract, it feels like it's tough to just, I don't know if he's going to be a bench piece. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. It just feels like he's going to be at the top of the lineup on 2025 opening day.
On opening day, yes. I mean, if I'm imagining the scenario where the Jays are like dogpiling and they've somehow managed to, you know, win the ALCS or win the World Series, right? That's the goal, to win the World Series. Yeah. Like, I think a George Springer, probably at that point, you're getting an average offensive season from George Springer. But I don't think you're getting another 30 homer season from him, which he's never done with the Jays, by the way. But, you know, I think that right now his OPS plus is 93. Maybe he can bounce back to 100. Like, to me, if you could lock in a 100 OPS plus from George Springer next year, you do that in a heartbeat, which is not really where you want to be at. But he's entering his age 35 season.
Well, at least he's shown that he can be a baseball player again, where like there was talks at the start of this year where they were going to be like, well, are they going to DFA him? Like it was grim there for a little bit. I mean, he had a really good July. I think he dipped a bit in August there. Like, I mean, he was on fire for all of July. But yeah, like at least now you can look at him and be like, okay, he can play baseball still. But there was a moment there during the season where you're like, oh no, he is actually just completely cooked. So yeah, so he's going to contribute. So Bo, do you think Bo is going to contribute next year?
I actually
think they're
going to
keep him around.
And
yeah,
I actually kind of do. And, you know, talking to Bo last week in Boston. Yeah. He seemed to be kind of, it's funny, right? Because in some ways he's had the same experience with fans for like July and certainly the first few weeks of August, where he was following the team closely, watching the team, but he wasn't physically with the team. So, you know, he was following from a little bit of a distance, and hearing his perspective on that was not dissimilar from talking to fans and talking to other people around the team, where he's like, man, these young guys are kind of fun. Like, I'm really liking what I see here. And then he's also like, and Vladdy, oh my goodness, like Vladdy, he's the best hitter in baseball. And Bo is like super excited about Vladdy. And that to me is also really cool. Just how those guys, 8 seasons in a row, they've been teammates. Like, they know each other so well. They know each other's swings. And Bo is like the biggest Vladdy fan that you're going to find. And I've always thought that's really cool. So I actually kind of think, look, are they going to be open to trading him this offseason? Yes, they will be. But I actually kind of think, if I had to guess, that Bo would be back. And he's the shortstop, and he's entering his age 27 season, I want to say.
God, these guys are
this
so
is a guy that you want.
Ernie Clement is older than Bo Bichette.
Right. Like, you want Bo Bichette's age 27 season. That's a season you want to have on your team.
Definitely.
So definitely. I sort of think he's coming. Where are you at with Bo?
My dream scenario, Ben, is that both of them get really long extensions, Vladdy and Bo, and they're both here for long term. Because, like, it's so funny, man, with the recency bias in baseball, which is the number one sport where you shouldn't have recency bias. But Bo is, when he is on, which is a lot, he is an elite hit. Like, is this the first season of his career where he's been under an 800 OPS? Like, I feel like every year he's right there. Yeah, and he's led the league in hits a couple times. His defense has improved significantly, and you give him tons of credit for that because he's out on the field all the time working on it pregame. Like, he is a guy that he cares. He's a passionate guy. And I would love for both of them to sign 10-year contracts with the Toronto Blue Jays and remain. I don't think it's possible with both. I think they kind of are going to pick and choose here, and Bo probably would be the odd man out, just because I couldn't actually tell you exactly why. Maybe because he doesn't want to be here. You know, I don't know if that's even true, but that's a narrative that's out there. Remember the Nightingale stuff with him, and I who knows if that's actually even true. But he's an awesome, awesome baseball player, and he's so much fun to watch. He's an electric player. My dream scenario would be just to keep them both. But going into next season, I mean, if you get blown away this offseason for Bo, I think that's something you have to listen on if it's true that he wants to go. But you're right. His age 27 season, it's not the worst outcome ever to have him playing on the team. You see how the team is. If you're good, you keep him past the trade deadline. Or if he's good and you're bad, you get an absolute haul for one of the best hitters in the American League when he's on in his age 27 season for a contending team that's looking for a shortstop or a second baseman.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's... Yeah. There's a chance here that you get even more for him if he's red hot at the trade deadline than you would in the offseason.
Bichette sends one to deep center. Gone! And it is their biggest inning of the season. And
it's one where I think you got to start the season with him next year unless someone blows you away this offseason. But to answer your first question, my ideal scenario is they sign them both, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And just to touch on the narrative of like, oh, the Bo wants out. Like, I don't get that sense. And we're all reading tea
Nightingale
leads,
doesn't have the most perfect. He doesn't have the most perfect track record. You don't have to say that. I'll say that. Yeah.
Great guy.
He gets everything wrong all the time. Yeah. Okay. I don't know him, so I can say that. He's wrong exclusively.
I'll leave that. Leave that there. But I think. Certainly when it comes to Bo Bichette and his standing with the Blue Jays, like, I think Bo's best case scenario, and this is all said with the caveat of like, I'm reading tea leaves too, because it's not like I've had a heart to heart with Bo Bichette on this. So, but from reading tea leaves, I think Bo Bichette's best case scenario is him and Vlad are hoisting up the World Series trophy. That, I think, is by far his best case in Toronto, obviously.
Yes.
I think his second best case scenario is he's hoisting up the World Series trophy with like the Dodgers or the Mets or some other team. Not the Mets because they have Lindor, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think his, you know, beyond that, it's like they're not good scenarios for him. Like losing with the Blue Jays, not fun for Bo Bichette. Losing with another team, not fun for Bo Bichette. He's not going to be one of those guys, in my opinion, that takes like a mega deal from the White Sox because they're trying to reestablish their, you know, themselves. He's going to try to
baseball
win
team
somewhere
as opposed to a Swansea softball league team.
Yeah, seriously, nice little West End reference there, Sam. So that's where I think he's at now. Do I think that an extension is really easy here? No, because you know, in contrast to Vladdy, where I don't think it's that hard to come up with a framework for a Vlad Guerrero Jr. extension because he's performing really well. But for Bo Bichette, the performance isn't there. I actually think extending Bo Bichette, that's a really tough one. I don't know exactly how you would frame the value for that extension.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I guess I know how his agent would frame it. Look at my first four years in the major leagues where I wasn't hurt. I was amongst the best, and I want to be paid amongst the best. Like I don't know how you would. It's a tough one. I agree. Like I find contract negotiations, like there's nothing that would be harder to me than that. I would just give the guy the first thing. Like I'd be the worst general manager ever. Like, yeah, sure. Seems fine. Sign him up. Like, no, yeah. I don't want to piss anybody off here. Don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Yep. Sign him up. That would be me. So I don't really know, but yeah, he's going to be want to be paid as in a premium player at a premium position. And this season that he's had here, I don't think it's that. So it'll be a complicated one. And I think the most likely scenario is the one that I laid out, where he starts the season with the Blue Jays. If they're good and in contention, they keep him past the trade deadline. And if they're not, he's traded at the trade deadline, right? That seems like the most likely scenario to me.
For sure. And I think alongside that, there's room for a pursuit of someone like a Willy Adames or a Ha-Sung Kim.
Yep.
A couple shortstops that are out there in free agency this winter. So before we let you go here, Sam, and thanks again, you've been so generous with your
dude,
time.
My pleasure.
Here. But it's honestly great to just kind of shoot the breeze on the Jays here. But I want to check in on your thoughts on John Schneider real quick and the coaching staff and where they're at. And I'll share my thoughts afterwards. But where are you at with that as this season comes to a close? You know, because this is a big deal. And this is a topic, too, that I think fans have very polarized opinions on.
Yeah, I think it's hard to evaluate John Schneider this season because of like, I got to go to the bullpen here. And it's like, well, Zach Pop's going to give up four runs. And it's like, well, you had to go to the pen. You're not going to leave your starting pitcher in there to throw 110 pitches, but like the guy he's going to is not going to give him a lot. So it's hard to really analyze what, you know, a manager does with, you know, what he's got to play with in terms of a bullpen. And that's where I think about a manager's job is the number one job is knowing when to bring a guy in, what guy is the best matchup, that sort of thing. That's where I kind of evaluate it. Right. But to me, I don't know. It's just, there's a lot of people down there. A lot of cooks in the kitchen, Ben.
Yeah.
A lot of different opinions. Yeah. A lot of people floating around there. Multiple. I don't need to hear offensive coordinator in the baseball realm. Like, I don't need to hear that. I don't need to hear, like, I think you need to have one or two hitting coaches, a pitching coach, and the manager. You don't need to have seven guys in the bullpen giving guys different things. I think if there is one thing that they could do, it's maybe just consolidate what they have. I think Schneider's probably back next year. I think you give him one more kick at the can with a team that's actually decent. I'm not sure what his contract. I think he comes back. I don't know about Mattingly. I don't know about Hag. I don't know about any of these guys. I don't know. Guillermo Martinez. I don't know. I think I would like the process to be streamlined a little bit. Feels like there's a lot of opinions. But to me, you bring back Schneider for one more thing, one more season next year. If it's not going great, maybe it's a mid-season thing. Maybe it's at the end of the year. But I think he's got at least one more year in him, Ben. I do.
Yeah, I think for sure he does. I mean, at this point, Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro have had Gibby and Charlie Montoyo and Schneider.
Yeah.
You know, to get to a fourth manager, I mean, Brian Cashman's had like three, right? Like in 30 years when you think about Torrey and Girardi and Aaron Boone. Yeah, so I don't think that's going to happen. And furthermore, I actually think, and you know, maybe folks will disagree with me on this, which is fine. I think John Schneider has made mistakes as a manager, but I think he still has the potential to be a very good major league manager. I think he's really dialed in on the details. And I think that as he, you know, gains experience, then there's still a potential for him to be, you know, one of those managers who's making good moves in playoff series.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't need,
we'll
let's
see.
not, let's not, let's not relitigate last year's playoff series. I don't want to get into that.
That would be a whole other podcast.
All the smart baseball people that tune into At the Letters are like, oh boy, here comes this Dumbo to harp on them taking out Barrios. this is what I tuned into. Listen to Arden and Ben have smart baseball conversations, and Johnny from Etobicoke came flying in here and said, what are all the khakis? Those guys, oh, it's a spreadsheet. Ah.
Well, you know what, Sam? I think give yourself some credit. I think your takes were very much on point. Very reasonable.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you. Thank you for joining me today on ATL. Yeah, really appreciate it.
Dude, my pleasure. Anytime, and I'll let Arden take a seat back with his more measured takes.
That's right. Arden will be back soon. We'll be back next week. Thanks so much to Christian Ryan for producing, to Nick Andrade as well, and to Sam McKee for joining me on this week's episode of At the Letters.